June.
Oh, June, you saw.
Sorry,
yeah.
June. Yeah.
And how is he? What happened?
I don't know how he is today. I spoke to him and I haven't. There was no reply.
But what happened to him? He got
somebody got angry about his driving or whether. Because he stopped for some pedestrians at school. And he got out of the. He parked the truck in his usual parking place. And this guy walked up to him and hit him.
Boy, and he was in the hospital, you said?
He was in Munich for a whole evening.
Oh.
I just happened to know because I was visiting someone in the hospital.
I'm so glad you were there because we wouldn't have known otherwise.
I know. Mm-hmm.
Did you see him then?
Yeah.
And thank you. We'll certainly say prayers for him, right?
Yeah.
His cheekbone was broken?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Oh. They really whacked him.
Really, really whacked him with his glasses,
in his face.
Oh, I called him yesterday, he said his face was all swollen, he could call.
Yeah.
But he went to work.
He would, wouldn't he?
Otto, yeah.
Did he have new glasses?
He said he found some. Oh.
So, how's he going to get new glasses and stuff?
I have offered to take him.
Yeah, thank you.
Otto's a very good.
I know that. And a very sweet,
it's
independent.
Quite
yes. Well, please give him my best our best regards. And,
no, I will indeed, because he, one of the things that upset him is that I wanted to tell him. Yes, it's about.
Oh, yeah. Tell him where he's here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you for letting us know. I'm sure we all wish him the best.
Mm-hmm.
We are very all fit, very fond of him. This is so beautiful. Where did you find that one?
I made it.
You made it? It is absolutely beautiful.
Everybody in my workshop got one and they did it.
We have to pass it around. Isn't that lovely? What a great idea.
So nice.
I could see Heather. Heather makes the most beautiful cards and things. You have a real love with paper and colors and forms. So. You and Bob should hang out in his workshop for an afternoon. Of course you have, haven't you?
Everybody had to do one piece of origami at the beginning of the workshop. Mount Fuji with ocean, which they held in their hands and looked at it.
Ah. The universe in a grain of sand and heaven in a wildflower.
Amazing change in everybody.
I bet.
They didn't tell them what it was until they were finished and they were looking at it like this. Then I said, what you have in your hand is Mount Fuji with the ocean.
Oh, cool.
Cool. It's exactly what it is. It's cool. Neato nifty.
One piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. Just how you got it folded like that, that leaf is what.
Yeah.
I'll write your letter.
A three-word one.
Oh, goody, here you are. We were wondering how you are.
Oh, I'm okay.
News of your traffic violation. your violation
and
by traffic.
Yeah. Have less than me.
I'm so glad to see you. You got a really sexy eyeshadow on there.
Yeah, it's
faint. Is it?
I like that one lens.
Well, these are my broken spares. The other ones I don't have anymore.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. It's really painful being in a circumstance like that, I'm sure.
Well,
I mean, what can you say to anybody or do? I mean, it's just like they're going to be explosive. They're going to be explosive.
He wanted to do something, he did it. I was there.
Yeah. Nice to see you. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. So I hope you're full of questions and answers and comments and complaints today. It's your night. Yes.
Can you talk a bit about discriminating wisdom? Kind of as it would apply to the Lover's card in tarot. Because that's what I got a sense of that I wanted to hear more about from a Buddhist perspective as it applies to discrimination rather than criticism, which is really a huge kind of...
It is different, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what would you say would make the difference in that? Can you hear, Ruth?
Okay. To me, discrimination is an investigation. It's totally wholesome and it doesn't get one-sided at all. It's just open.
Yeah.
It's not right, it's not wrong, it's just, what's this? Oh, isn't that interesting, isn't that interesting? Where criticism is that, well, this is good, this is bad, there's always two sides to the, you know, critical comparisons,
right.
Definitely dual.
Right. So why would they be different? What would make the difference? Like sometimes I'm critical and sometimes I'm discriminating, right?
You are, or
yeah, me.
One is?
Yeah, me, you, us, we.
Right.
Me, for sure. So what would make that? What makes the difference? For yourself when you are, huh?
One positive, one negative. The critical being negative.
Huh, and how would it be negative?
Well, you're criticizing something as to your standard, or to your way it should be. That's why I would say negative. Whereas
discrimination?
Discrimination is a much wider view of it.
It's not about my view. I think that would be the key, that it's not about me. That discrimination is basically looking for clarity, and criticism is looking for right or wrong, depending on. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
I would think that would be the real difference. It was interesting that you would name criticism as being because I have a clinging to something. Because from a Buddhist point of view, that's exactly what would make something judgmental rather than discriminatory. And discrimination is usually qualified in translations from Buddhism as discriminating wisdom. The wisdom to be able to discriminate between, you know, whether this is one piece of paper or two pieces of paper. Oh, that's really neat. Look at that. It opens up. Oh, how neat is that? You know? That's like discrimination or, well, I think you should have done it, you know? I think it, does that make sense? Rather than, oh, is there another way this could be done?
Mm-hmm.
which opens investigation, doesn't it?
Does discrimination imply many other options, whereas criticism is as it were, in the one thing?
Basically, whenever something is involved in clinging to a self, sense of self, whether the self is whatever of the conceits are playing from Buddhist terminology, some people are always clinging to the idea that there's something they've done wrong. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that when they say something, they are criticizing their action from the past. Right? Oh, I'm sorry I did that, about something that isn't actually anything, really. Does that make sense? So it's not discrimination, that's judgment. It's like, I should have done something different. So the mind is whirling around how I am performing rather than, oh, here we are together, aren't we lucky? A bunch of unenlightened slobs aspiring together, how wonderful is that? Does that make sense? To actually acknowledge all of our shortcomings and then not negate our aspiration.
That's important.
So do you mean discrimination just be seeing differences?
Being able clearly to say, oh, this is different than that, to be able to discriminate. And it is very important to have good, clear discrimination if you're going to learn from your experiences. Oh, when I held my mouth this way, it was harder to chew than when I held my mouth this way, you know? Because the food kept leaking out of the side of my mouth, I couldn't chew it so well, but if I held... And that's discrimination. Okay, have this experience, then name it and see. So discrimination is involved in fine-tuning to have a better and better awareness of how this body is functioning. Discrimination is absolutely essential if you're going to understand consciousness. To be able to discriminate between a negative mind state and a self that is caught in negativity is very important, isn't it? To be able to discriminate between a positive mind state and a self that identifies with positivity is very important, isn't it? Do you follow what I'm saying? Because if you can be aware, oh, this is a depressed state, then you can also switch your attention to the space in which that state is arising. Can't you? If you can do that, you're less likely to believe it's an I. So too, when there is a critical mind state coming up and you can see the criticism and you can name, oh, this is a critical mind state, you're less likely to get hooked into being driven by it, however much of a habit it is. You actually can notice, oh yeah, there's something very familiar about this. And how would I like to use the energy this time just for the heaven of it? Just in this moment, what choice would I make? It isn't a matter of whether you've tried it before or tried it later or anything like that. Every moment is the only moment we have. Isn't it? So discrimination has a clarity to be able to see with freshness. And judgment is usually involved with self-grasping. Or I don't know whether it's true or not, but I often think of judgment as a result of something and discrimination as a possibility. What do you think? Is that reasonable? I think of judgment as the result of something. And discrimination as an opportunity to see something new. or to open in a new way. With judgment, there's you're sort of looking back in a way at what you already know and naming in relation to. With discrimination, you notice the window that you hadn't noticed before, and that it's open in another some light from some other possibility is shining in. And very often, when we see someone else and we see something in them that causes us to be judgmental, it has a lot to do with parts of ourselves that we're afraid of.
Like a shadow.
Yeah, in the West we would call that a shadow. In Buddhism you would call it mirror-like wisdom. And it's reflecting back the things that you have some emotional attachment to, either due to fear or desire, or in the Buddhist tradition they say you are as tied by what you dislike as you are by what you like. That's why the meditation on equanimity is very useful. Teaching yourself to see how everything is flowing and changing, so therefore without a fixed identity.
Is it the liking and disliking that changes it from discriminating to judging?
It can be. And then there's an I who grasps at the like or grasps at the dislike.
So can there be a like and dislike without an I?
There is a like and dislike without an eye, but the grasping, the reaction of grasping at the like and dislike.
So can there be a preference?
There's a preference, but then you look at the circumstance and say, is this a good time to have my preference?
So judgment would be when you cling to the preference.
Regardless of the circumstances, yeah.
But you could still have preference in discriminating wisdom.
Yeah. But you're discriminating about whether this is a good time. Like, I might really prefer always to turn left in my car, but if it's a one-way street when I turn left, it might not be a good idea for me to keep my preference.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, to see that preference, know that I prefer to turn left. But, however, in the present moments, my discrimination tells me, not a good idea. I should be happy turning right.
Misunderstood it. I thought that knowing that this is purple and this is black was discriminating, and preferring the purple meant with judgment. But there can be a preference as long as they're not attached to it.
As long as you're not, it doesn't negate your ability to see whether that's useful in the present moment, which is discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
I've said many times that like and dislike are really good friends. You can have a lot of fun with them, but you should never make them rulers. You don't just salute every time they walk in the door. And that's what the Buddha said when, in his beautiful advice, well, it would be useful from time to time to find the beautiful in the unbeautiful and the unbeautiful in the beautiful. Just to play around so that you actually know you have a choice when like and dislike comes up. If a mind state comes up that you don't like, practice something you could like about it. But if you're so attached to disliking it, you can't do that. If you're so attached to disliking it, how are you ever going to be able to let go of it? It's kind of a no-brainer, isn't it? The only way you can really let go of it is to be the space in which it arises, to be aware of the space in which it arises. So realize that that's a mind state that's rising in a space called consciousness. there are these four foundations of mindfulness. Perhaps you've heard of them. And what's the first one? Awareness of body, actually, yeah. It is form, is it? Kaya?
Yeah.
Kaya Upasana? Is it form or
structure?
I can't remember the Pali now. I don't know whether it's Rupa Nupasana or Kaya Nupasana. I think it's Kaya. I think it's form. But it essentially is starting with the body. So that you actually ground yourself in your body and you have awareness in the body. And then the next one is what? Vedana. Yeah. And then the next one? Mental formations. And what are they? You hear that bird?
Mm-hmm.
What is the reaction when you listen to that bird? What is the mind? You hear that humming sound? Different feeling when you're listening to that? Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Which one is more fun to listen to?
Mm-hmm.
What's the mind state when you're listening to the bird?
Happy.
It's got joy, yeah. Happiness, yeah. It's pleasant.
Inquisitive.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So like interest? What about when you're listening to the humming sound or can't quite hear it and you're trying to figure out where it is? What's the mind state that comes with that?
Orientation.
Okay. So, you see, it's like the mind state is the kind of the ambiance that's playing all the time in the spaciousness of the mind. Is that clear? There, that's the humming real good.
It gets quieter when you turn it up.
What if there's this light?
It was full.
It's fine. It's fine. I was happy to have it, actually. You're not? Didn't bother you before. What?
When there's dislike, are you usually becoming aware of a negative reaction that's already a habit? Because I'm thinking of, like, if I say it's a sound at night, if I'm trying to sleep and there's like a honking or a motorcycle or somebody noisy in the street, and it's like, is there something I habitually react to?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's just sound.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sound. Nobody's actually stopped, come up to you and punched you in the side of the face. Right?
Yeah.
It's just sound. So there is a sense of somehow or other that shouldn't happen, or, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this feeling of like, I can't sleep with that sound, or what is it you do?
Well, that could be a possibility.
So that we'll just take that as a possibility. I can't sleep. Which immediately sets up a pattern, right? Because you know you're going to fall asleep sometime anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not true that you can't sleep. And that could happen after you fell asleep and you wouldn't wake up. Right? Because it probably does. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is this mind state of being disturbed and irritation. When there is a sense of disturbance and there's irritation. So when the focus is something that you associate with disturbance, there is irritation. When, you know, that bird could keep somebody else awake. They could put cats out everywhere to change all, chase all the birds away because they couldn't go to sleep because of the birds. Who knew? But that's not a problem for you. you'd probably fall asleep sorting through different dreams and wondering which bird it was and have dreams about birds all night. Right? Mm-hmm. Whereas the sound. So what's the difference? It's sound. Isn't it? Mm-hmm. But one state of mind is irritation and one state of mind is interest. Right?
Now I'm thinking, what about if the body doesn't like something, if it's like a sound, or if that's possible, like
No, it isn't. Not the body. The mind, which can cause the body to react. Like when your mind doesn't like something, it starts sending out message to the body. Like now I don't like the lab. Turn it off. And then there's always that background thing. And so that's like the judgment that we were talking about. Does that make sense? When you're irritated by something, and you feel, you don't just turn and look at, oh, that's irritation, and actually get interested, like you do with the bird. Mm-hmm. Because the dislike is a mental state. That dislike is a mental state. So in the Buddhist teaching, there are three types of feeling for mind, which are?
Neutral.
And why the Buddha was suggesting to find something you dislike and what you like and like and what you dislike is that you can learn that what you have disliked is habitual. And you can teach yourself to go into a state of interest about your dislike, which makes it neutral. And neutral is right next door to equanimity. It's totally useless to try to like the dislike. I mean, it's fun to try to find something you might like about what you dislike, because that starts to make you interested in the dislike, which brings you very quickly to neutrality. I'm not going to mention it.
So neutrality isn't a feeling then, it's a state of mind separate from feelings.
In Buddhism there are five feelings. Some people say there are six, but from my reading of classical Buddhism there are five. There are pleasure and pain of the body, and there is like, dislike, and neutral of the mind. You know that some places in your body you don't really feel anything particularly, but like one cell over you will feel pleasure or pain. Mm. You know that? Mm. And what in the mind, you have the three. So when you have a physical experience of dislike, of pain, and you mentally don't like it, that increases the suffering. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. When you have a physical experience of pain and you're in shock, their mind is in neutral. It doesn't either like or dislike. Mm-hmm. And the pain is there. You're aware of it, but you're not disliking it. You know that one. Mm-hmm. Just for a moment. You know that one? Anybody here doesn't know that one? Any of you never cut yourself somehow and suddenly looked at it and seen it bleeding and then a minute later felt the pain? Mm-hmm. And just aware, oh, it's bleeding, just, right? No particular dislike of it, just aware. You've all had that experience, haven't you?
Yeah.
Now that is when the mind is in neutral. You can teach yourself to be in a neutral mind state. And so that you can observe what is happening with the body from a very clear point of view, or the mind. you can see, oh, here is a mind state of a loud sound and disliking it. Oh, what is it I dislike most about it? Or any way you want to. You can turn the mind to interest. Do I hear it stronger from my right ear or my left ear? Well, my left ear is on the pillow. Oh, can I hear it through the pillow? You get it? You actually bring your mind to explore that. Then when you don't add when you don't have the physical dislike and the mental dislike, you cut your suffering in half. Neutral is next door to equanimity. And equanimity is very important for being able to see things as they are. It's one of the reasons we have a hard time letting go of a sense of self. It's because of not being able to see how the self is shifting and changing all the time. That there isn't a fixed self. True? So when you have equanimity, it's called in Buddhism no-thingness. So the neutral mind weans you away from a particular habitual identity, neutral feeling. So in the Tibetan tradition, when they talk about the five aggregates as Dhyani Buddhas, as enlightened attributes of being, Ratnasambhava, the Dhyani Buddha of feeling, has the wisdom of equality. He's not caught by like or dislike or by pleasure or pain. There is this ability to see them as they are, and then choose for the benefit of all beings. So his quality is richness. Because any circumstance is his richness.
Which Buddha is that?
Ratnasambhava.
Oh.
Interesting, huh? The wisdom of equality. Then the Dhyani Buddha that is the representative of and by the way, just one more thing, Ratnasambhava is absolutely essential for you to perfect kindness. Isn't that true? Because you can't see beauty everywhere and have kindness everywhere unless you have that wisdom of equality. Is that true? Want me to say more about that, or?
Mm.
Okay, what will I say? No. Is that a cat or somebody coming up the stairs? Hard to say. Oh. Okay, so in order to see the rich possibility of everything, you have to not be stuck on some things are, I like this and I don't like that. Is that true? Or stuck in your mind about, or stuck in your body about, I can't stand pain, or this is more pleasurable, I only can go for pleasure. True? You have to, in order to see the richness in everything, the beauty in everything, you have to be able to realize the power of the neutral feeling state of mind. If you do that, then wherever you are is showering you with blessings, and you are seeing everything else as blessed. Isn't that the basis of loving kindness, of kindness? To see beauty everywhere? Isn't that what they say in the Visuddhimagga, that when loving kindness is fully developed, it becomes the awareness of boundless beauty? That's what I remember. Do you remember me saying that before sometime? When loving kindness is fully developed, it becomes boundless beauty. When compassion is fully developed, it becomes boundless spaciousness. When sympathetic joy is fully developed, it becomes boundless consciousness. When equanimity is fully developed, it becomes boundless nothingness.
Boundless.
Nothingness, no fixed identity. Everything is a flux. And Tarchin often refers to interbeing, that quality of moving here, dissolving here, moving there. All form is slowly disintegrating into spaciousness. All spaciousness is slowly creating new form. There's this continuous dancing flow of the material world. You've noticed that. Surely. Ever watch dust collect in your living room? Where does it collect? Where there's things or where there's no things? This flow. It's this flow, isn't it?
So you have to keep centered through whatever sign whatever flowing on either sign.
But we are always centered. There is no other place that we are except the center. It's the feeling that it's somewhere else that creates the pain. So like how to become present, and when that feeling of dissatisfaction arises, to look at it with neutrality. That would be a big help, wouldn't it? See, that would be a really big help. But because your mind states are like and dislike and neutral, you actually can do it. If as soon as that feeling of dissatisfactory arises, you didn't either dislike it or dislike what you had and start grabbing, but you're just able to look at it. So that's the whole beginning of meditation practice, to teach yourself to hold a focus regardless of what is happening. Don't jump into identities. You don't have to do it for long. Even if you do it like for 5 or 10 minutes a day, it's such a relief. Your mind will like start practicing it just for the heaven of it. Just when you think less of it, you're just about to go into one of your habitual damn, they shut the car door and I was just about asleep. And you just see one part of your mind just saying, oh, just watch that. And not buying into it. That's the first thing you should learn from your meditation, how to hold your mind steady on a point and watch the flow. They call it focus. And how you develop focus is not getting pissed off when you don't. That doesn't do anything, does it? Or sitting there and pretending you're doing a good job, but like just going off on all your daydreams. So neither one of them, neither the great disciplinarian or the great libertarian, neither one of them works. Somewhere right in the middle, when you catch yourself thinking, you just go, oh, thinking, neutral, and you bring your mind back. And just, oh, you say, okay, just for 5 more minutes, I just want to see if I can just keep my mind centered on a blue flower, on your breath, you know, on anything. Doesn't matter what. Really doesn't matter what. Just keep bringing your mind back to that one point so that you teach yourself to be able to identify the mind states as they come up. As soon as you identify one, you're thinking, and you bring your mind back. So that after a period of time of doing that, whatever these states are that are such wonderful ideas or such boring ideas or who knows what in between, you actually just know that those are like flows in the mind and you're holding your focus steady. When you do that in your meditation, then the next thing that comes is usually a lot of physical pain. Because the mind doesn't particularly want to be trained. It wants to keep going in its old habits. It feels safe. It feels like me. Or sleepiness. Suddenly you sit down to sit. I remember sitting down to sit and falling asleep 5 seconds later. wide awake, early morning. I'd slept like 9 hours. Get up, stretch a little bit, and you know, we used to have to run, go sit down. Still, like, you know, like the wild horse, you don't get angry or anything, you know. You can do things. I had a friend, I used to remember Tim, I had him sit on the edge of the porch, edge of the railing, because he was always falling asleep, you know. So he's sitting on this railing, and if he teetered too much, he'd fall, and he almost fell a couple of times, but he didn't fall asleep. He quit coming to retreats after that. He didn't fall asleep. So once you get past the sleepiness, and you know, they have classical ways of doing it too. You imagine somebody is about to stab you from behind, or you know, to sort of bring the adrenaline up, to bring your energy up. You don't do that if you tend to paranoia already. Imagine somebody you really love is just about to walk in the room and you want to look in front of somebody. There's lots of ways to do it, you know. But it is like, teach yourself, like, not to fall for any of that. And if you don't fall for those cheap tricks, then the next thing the mind does, which is the wish-fulfilling gem, and can grant you anything, even enlightenment. And then the next thing it does is it starts throwing a few little goodies. You know, you've always been wondering what an angel would look like. Suddenly angels start appearing, or these great experiences of floating through space. Or, you know, it gets downright delicious for a while. And that quite often, you know, people will very often, you know, start chasing some of those around. That's good. Your price was a little higher than the last three times, but, you know, now you begin. You forgot to hold your focus. And lots of people start meditating, and they stay at that point for a long time, having these great experiences. But they're not going anywhere. Just like a really good TV, you know, with a disc, they can get, like, how many channels? 543 and a half or something, you know. Bling, 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 you know, entertainment endlessly. But it's not necessarily insight. It's not necessarily victory. It's not necessarily compassion. That's a whole other quality. That means you have to be able to be the rider, not the one who falls for, you know, a couple of little treats. Doesn't mean that you negate those things. It means that you just don't buy them when you're doing your practice. That's what the review is for. Later you can say, what was that? What did those angels come down and tell me what the lottery ticket was? I should get the number. What was that? You know, you do that after the meditation session. So by doing this, you see that if you just watch your breath and just keep being patient and bringing your focus back, not getting angry, not getting upset, setting the time you're going to sit, and sit every day as much as you can for that time. Say if you start with 10 minutes and then after a week you want to do more, say no. After 2 weeks you really want to do, okay, I'll do 20 minutes. I want to do an hour. No, okay, you can do 20 minutes. So you do 20 minutes for another week, you want to do more? No. You always make yourself a little hungry for the next step. Does that make sense? Because you know how you get enthusiastic and then you fall back? Mm-hmm. Don't do it. Always leave yourself a little bit hungry. And never come to the point that I am at. You know, don't ever become the kind of meditator I am, where I sit for 2-3 hours without moving. Okay?
I didn't hear that.
Oh, that's strange. Because that's bad discipline. So you don't want to do that.
But I find that I'm a really bad discipliner.
Why?
Well, I just, my mind doesn't what it wants a lot of time and really settle away. Since I settle away, I think I'm still doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
That's okay. That's okay. That's okay. What you do, like, what are you? What is your practice that you're doing? Are you doing mantra?
I'm not doing any practice.
Would you like to?
Get back into it?
Yeah.
I know that it's very important to do, and it just seems that I'm not having much room anymore.
Yeah. Would you
because,
like to?
I know that there's results from it, and it just...
Would you like to do more practice?
Sure.
Start with 10 minutes.
Again?
Start with 10 minutes.
Okay.
We all got 10 minutes every day.
In the morning?
Anytime that works for you.
Okay.
Morning is best for me. Some people, evening is best. As long as it's not just before you go to sleep.
Yeah.
That's an important thing. Some people, when they come home from work and before they have dinner, they just sit for 10 minutes. That works for them. Some people, that's the very best. Some people, I'm better in the morning. But it's up to you. Whatever works best for you. Does that make sense? And you just say, okay, this week, as much as I am able, I'm going to sit for 10 minutes every day. So what do you think? In the morning would be better?
Well, I like doing it in the morning.
Okay.
It affects basically for a long time during the day.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So what do you do when you get up in the morning? What's the first thing you do? Pee?
Yeah.
And then second?
Have some water.
Okay, cold water?
Tap water.
Tap water, yeah, okay. So when you have your water, then what do? Stretch and go and look out the window or?
Start figuring out what I have to do.
Okay, so before you do that, you take your glass of water and you sit down. And you imagine yourself taking whatever refuge you want. Soon I'm going to have this glass of water, or I take refuge in whatever. Whatever. Gold light, whatever. Whatever works for you. This 10 minutes is my refuge, whatever. Okay? Then you, after you've taken refuge, then you take one sip of water and you put the water down. And then you focus on your breath. Just where you can feel it on your nostril. And you count 10 breaths in, out, 10 breaths. In, out, count one. In, out, count two. On the out breath, you count. You more or less keep yourself counting 10 breaths. After you've counted 10 breaths, then you watch one more breath without counting, then you take another sip of water. You put it down, and you sit there, and then you watch another 10 breaths, and you try to just see a little more, how does the breath move different from the in-breath? Just try to sharpen your focus a little bit. And then at the end of that 10 breaths, another sip of water. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's going to work for me because I really want to drink a glass of water.
So drink half a glass of water and then fill the glass again and then, because you know then you've already got half a glass of water.
Okay, that's better.
You know, so drink half the glass and then fill the glass again and then do this. And by the end of the 10 minutes, before the 10 minutes, you will have finished the glass of water, right? But you sit there until 8 minutes are up. And at 8 minutes, then you think to yourself, okay, could I actually see the breath most of the time? Did my mind wander a lot? How much was I able to focus and how much wasn't I? And then you wish whatever you wish for that practice, for other beings or whatever. And then you go. Have your breakfast and do the rest. You won't even notice that the 10 minutes have gone, but you'll notice a big difference in the rest of your day.
Yeah, I'm usually pretty set that I don't be late. So
you'll just have to have your breakfast ready the night before, won't you?
Preparation.
What's the preparation? Your clothes?
No, just to get everything going so that when it's time to leave, I leave.
What's everything going?
Well, that I'm dressed, that I'm
But you put your clothes out the night before. You do most of the preparation the night before.
Okay. Yeah, I'm one of these people that usually leave until the last minute.
You do your other preparation the night before so that you can sit in the morning. I'm waiting for your next objection because I'm used to at least four from you. Come on. That was only one and a half.
Already beaten up.
Oh, come on, Otto. Maybe you were beaten up too much. Yeah. Maybe I should have just... Oh, damn.
Easy.
Okay, you're right. He's wounded. Do you think you can play with it?
Yeah, sure.
I'm interested.
If I will or not, I have a full intention.
I'm interested, and I want you to email me what happened with it in 4 days.
Well, I can keep I got another thing. I don't have no computer.
And do you know anybody?
I mean, I have a computer, but it's in bags. Someone gave
Do you
it
know? Do you know anyone who has a computer? Yeah. And is she somebody that you could phone and and maybe like get a little computer time from?
Well, I'm illiterate. I don't know how to do that.
So you could tell her what to email me? And she could do that?
What would you like to know?
I want to know what happened after 4 days of trying this.
Okay.
I want to know whether it worked or not. I want to know whether you were able to sit for 8 minutes
well,
and then...
Well, that's no problem. I can do that all that.
Okay, then why were you saying it's what happens after I meditate that's the problem, that I have to get ready. I have this thing about being on time.
Oh, but no, when I wake up, it's like I wake up at sometime a little bit before 6, and then I have like, I usually try to get out like about 20 after 6.
So now you're going to wake up at 10 to 6.
Okay. And do.
So there you got 10 minutes.
But the mind always is other things, and then it's important this and that. And meditation's finished, even.
No, you sit for the 10 minutes, and whenever your mind goes off like that, you just say thinking, and you bring it back to the breath.
Even if my awareness is about that 10 minutes later?
Doesn't matter. The minute you're aware that you're not watching the breath, because it's only 10 minutes and you got your glass of water and you can't take the next swallow until you've watched 10 breaths. Yeah. So you've already got the little crumbs. Well, try it and tell me what happens.
Okay.
If you want to meditate, it would be possible, wouldn't it?
Yeah, sure.
And if you want to... Is your time in this life as important as your time is in a day?
I can't hear you.
Is your time in this life as important as your time in a day? What you're doing in this whole life,
yeah,
is that as important as what you're doing in a day?
It depends. How I look at it. Well, I think it has really, like, it's valuable, yeah, but if I don't, depending what state of my mind is in.
But you told me that you can feel the difference when you meditate. For most of the day, you can feel a difference.
Yeah, if I make some effort to it, yeah.
So, is that worthwhile in your life if you were able to keep that up for a month? Would that make a whole month of feeling the effect of the meditation? Would that change a little bit the texture of your life?
I'm sure it would. Yeah.
Would you like that to happen?
I mean, it doesn't really matter that much to me in one way.
Okay. Thank you.
Because why I say that is because I've done a lot of practice.
I know you have, my friend. I know you have.
So it's just about the doing the discipline now seems to be hard.
Okay, so then not sitting. How about not sitting? How about six times a day bringing a focus into being where you are?
Well, I do that.
Yeah.
Already. I'm sure, you know, the soul.
And you name that awareness of being where you are. And then at night, before you go to sleep, guess what you do? You remember every six of those times.
Would it be better for me to write it down on a piece of paper when I do it?
Nope. We're talking about focus here. We're not talking about discipline. We're talking about focus.
But six times is quite a lot because there's so much.
But you said you do it all day. Isn't it good?
Yeah, it is.
Didn't I tell you? Usually four. Now where are we? It's about eight and seven, I think. Seven? Are we at seven now?
I'm a rascal.
It's not so much you're a rascal, it's you're damn good. I admire it. Because on the one hand you're asking and on the other hand you're backing up.
Yeah.
And it's really wonderful the way you do that. You're an amazing dancer.
I love the music.
I love the music. You notice how a willing partner I am.
There's no problem with that. I can do that.
Do what?
What you asked.
What did I ask?
To focus six times in a day.
Focus where you are. Where you are.
And then remember this.
Focus where you are six times a day. Then at night, anytime you want, after you're at home, after you eat, before you go to sleep, whatever, you remember where you were each of those six times, and you remember who was around you or what your circumstance was. And you wish all those beings or whatever was there, may that space be well and happy.
Okay, six is quite a high number, though.
See? How about five?
That's still
What about
three is good.
Three?
Three is good.
Okay, do three.
Because I might lose count. I'm not trying to be funny, but...
See what I mean? One step forward, one step back.
I want to do it well.
You don't have to do it well, you just have to see what happens if you play with it more or less. You don't have to do it perfectly, that's not the idea, my friend.
Okay.
As much as you are able is the idea. But as long as you keep your interest, if you're trying to do it perfectly, you're going to get uptight about it, and then it's going to be a discipline, and I'm not interested in discipline. You've got way too much discipline already. I'm more interested in the mind being able to rest lightly on a point without getting caught in the dialogue. I think that would be wonderful for you. That's what interests me.
I'm if I do three and then all of a sudden I remember, and then should I just leave it?
Why don't you see what feels right? Why don't you see what feels right? You can do as many as you want. But I would say a minimum of three. Does that sound reasonable?
Okay.
All right. I'm holding my breath. The mind is churning over there.
No, I'm okay with that.
All right.
is just getting my way out.
One step forward, one step back.
So why should you not meditate just before you go to sleep?
Because it really can cause problems with sleep patterns and dream. If that's your best time to meditate, that's great. I would leave at least a half an hour, and if you're very good at concentration, an hour between when you finish sitting and you sleep. Because meditation actually enlivens the body. When the mind-body cleans it out and makes it more aware, so it can be hard to sleep. And when you are in retreat, if you have some experience meditating, it's hard to sleep more than 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And even then, you watch your mind go into sleep. Not until you've been meditating for a while, but you can see, oh, now I've actually gone below the awake line. And it's like a very subtle shift in the body, like somebody put a dimmer switch on some of the usual lights, like the hearing and stuff is still working, but in a slightly different mode. In like cat sleep, you know? When you watch cat sleep, you can see that it's still listening. You know that one? You know that one. Yeah, there's like this awareness happening. But, you know, you don't believe me and you don't have anything urgent to do the next morning, try meditating quite stringently for like an hour and then going to bed for about 3 nights and then see how your sleep's going. And don't phone me in the middle of the night to tell me, please. I'll believe you later. I had no trouble sleeping. I just had to wake up to tell you this. No, it's okay. I like your questions, as you know. Just rubs slowly and softly up and down with your thumb. Just a little more. And be aware of the sensation. Is there a warmth? Is there a...
I can see my bones.
But what is the sensation? Not the seeing. I'm not interested in the seeing. I'm interested in feeling. And the sensation in terms of from your foot, is the pressure calming? Is the pressure, you know, like there's a slight pressure from your thumb? You're not pushing hard.
Soothing.
And how does that soothing feel in your foot? Go a little more into that feeling. And put your awareness in your other foot for a moment. And now put your other hand on your other foot. And just touch your other foot in a similar way. Just touching, not massaging or looking for corns or anything like that. Just feel the pressure. Be aware of it and the heat of your hand. Gentle. It just brings the brain out of so much activity and brings a balance between the brain and the body. Humming at the same time helps. If you don't make it a song, but you're listening to the sound inside your body, the two together are wonderful. Is that helpful? Sound, but especially touching the feet. Isn't that amazing?
You remember the one you told me one time where I said I was having trouble sleeping? To pick my foot up. Remember?
And massage it.
And massage it.
And sing, yeah.
I tried that a few times. I wasn't very successful at it, but I tried it.
But this time this worked better, didn't it?
Yeah, this worked, yeah.
Because you're not trying anything. You're just seeing, what does my foot feel like? So when you're trying, it's the mind still trying to make something happen.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're feeling, and it's just so subtle, that shift, but when we're in a mind anxiety, it's hard to let go of the mind. So the sound can sometimes help that. But the moment you let go of the mind of trying, in your body, and you can feel the mind picking up the habit again. And just come back down. Kindness. Kindness. The only place we have to practice kindness is with ourselves. Once we have it with ourselves, it will spread out. We can wish it to spread out, but it will spread out. We have to be kind with ourselves first. It's absolutely essential. Very simple little things. Well, they're still handed down by people because they...
Thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure. If you keep saying, yeah, but then I went back to it, you know, you're ignoring the fact that for a moment there was a change. And that looking at, oh right, there is a calmness in my body. Even if it lasted 1 second, that's 1 second more than there was before, you know? So not like disliking the state, but actually seeing the possibility, bring it back to discrimination, seeing the possibility of calming. Some of these patterns, they go very deep, you know, from lifetimes. So it might take a minute to establish another possibility. It might take a minute. Geez, that's too bad. But isn't that what you want to do for the benefit of who's going to get on your horse next? My beloved teacher, Ananda Bodhi, or Namjo Rinpoche, said, if you're not going to do this work for yourself, at least have some compassion for the poor bugger that's going to have to get on that horse when you get off. And it's true, isn't it? Whatever it is that you are is not the result from one life, is it? I'm not saying that you have many lifetimes. I'm saying that that's your choice to believe or not believe. But you have an awful lot of moments of lives in this lifetime to have learned this and that and this and that, haven't you? And all your parents and grandparents and great-grandparents and ancestors and clans and family history and the billions and billions of moments of cultures that have created this circumstance. Isn't that a lot of lifetimes? What are you going to add to that, those grains of sand of the mandala offering? You know, at least have some compassion for the poor bugger that's going to inherit our breathing in this room. At least. Okay, I don't want to change, but I'll offer one breath for someone else. Where's my feet? Does that make sense? No?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, it does. Amen.
Amen. All right, thank you. Questions, answers, comments, or complaints? It was a beautiful Wesak, wasn't it, those of you who were there?
Yes, it was.
All that chanting. Did you enjoy it, Ruth?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the speaker had really interesting kind of histories, eh, of Burma and Burmese. I had no idea it took that long for the Buddha's teaching to be translated into Burmese so anyone could read it. Remember when we were in Burma and in that bookstore they had translations of the... Remember that? They had translations of some of the sutras?
Yeah.
They were all worm-eaten and everything, but...
Yeah.
Funky old bookstore we went into.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, in Rangoon I would have to find a second-hand bookstore to go into. You understand? It would be absolutely necessary. Check out the Buddhist section. It wasn't in a special section, was it? It was just piles. So maybe we just take a moment or two to just watch our breath together. Focus on the breathing. Notice whether you feel the breath more in the right nostril or the left nostril, or both. Don't change it, just notice. Notice whether you feel the breath more on the out-breath or the in-breath. Wherever wherever you feel it most clearly, just put your focus there. Pull your chin in, Jeff. Be curious to see whether the breath is actually going to change nostrils while you're watching it. Or change where you feel it. Just see how good your focus is as well by seeing if you can count 10 breaths by when we feel the breath on the out-breath, just mentally think one. See if you can more or less follow 10 breaths without losing count. If you lose count, just start at one again and just be interested. Don't have to do it, just be curious. It's a soft awareness you practice. present moment. I mean, of course it's here, but in the room. You know, of course, when you're sitting, your eyes are always slightly open. You know that. You don't know that? You know that if you have your hands like this, in a kind of a circle, that if you start feeling really sleepy, you can just open the space under your armpits. And maybe your hands come up a bit, but really open the space. You don't lift your shoulders though, really, if you can do it. And just kind of under the armpits, kind of. And just hold your hands up like that so your thumbs are actually touching, makes kind of a circle there. And just feel how that changes the energy flow of your spine. You know, can you feel that? Lift them up a little more. And then just lower them really slowly again. You feel the difference? These are the little things you learn when you sit. Long hours. Start getting sleepy. Move your arms up a little bit, opening the space under your to here, maybe. Start getting a little too, the mind's getting a little too scattered, just roll them down, close the space under your interesting?
Mm-hmm.
If you feel an itch on your nose, you just say, feeling. You want to like teach your mind to hold a focus, not be irritated. It's important. Simple, but elegantly beautiful, what you learn if you do that. How to hold a center point. It's hard to hold a center point. And for some of us, we've got other stuff to work with that makes it even a little harder than for the average Joe Blow. If you want to do it, it's there. In your mind is pleasure, painful, and neutral. To teach yourself to prefer to sit in the neutral is a choice. When you have that choice, you have more wisdom with everything around you. You don't get caught by the patterns so easy. Easily. Grammar did. Is that interesting to you?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very simple practice, and if that's all you can do, 3, 5, 10 minutes a day, it will have big benefits in your life. I really recommend it. It doesn't matter whether you do it well, only that you have an interest in trying. You get those little subtleties that aren't ever when the mind is taking over. It's not subtle, is it? But when you actually feel the body, there's a subtlety there. It's very beautiful. And something in your heart opens up with that, doesn't it? That's what you want. Your heart is your friend. So, thank you. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings.
So there is no suffering.
Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings.
So there is no suffering.
Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings.
So there is no suffering.
So, tomorrow morning is the puja, Genmaisi. Tomorrow afternoon from 2 to maybe 4. I brought a bunch of poetry with me. I brought a bunch of poetry books with me. You all bring your poetry books over? We'll sit around and read. I brought some nasty poetry and some funny poetry and some limericks and all kinds of poetry. So come on over. If Kathy and Bob have to go out, we'll wave goodbye to them and promise to lock the doors and not make the cats write poetry.
The cats like to write poetry.
Okay, they can then. Like Archie and Mehetabel, we'll teach them how to jump down on the keyboard and type their own views. Is that a deal? Poetry reading tomorrow? And I thought we'd put out a bowl, and you could either copy out a poem you really liked that we read, if you have some piece of paper, or whatever you wanted to put in, and I thought I'd send it. We'd send it to Karen and Rob. To just, you know, wishes or money or whatever you want to send. Is that okay? Does that sound all right with to everybody?
Great idea.
Because, you know, might as well feed them through a poetic straw. Karen's writing such beautiful poetry. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you. Thank you. That's it, we're done, eh?
No one's moving.
It's nice sitting together, isn't it?
Yes.
That was 10 minutes, by the way. Was that a long time?
No.
Son of a gun. I almost said bitch, and I just changed it to gun after the B, so that would be son of a gun. Quite right.
I'm so sad.